All right, so how's it going? What was due today? The approach. So how'd that go?
30 pages is a lot of pages.
Okay. That's eventually what it'll be. Of course, this first version is not going to be that long. How important is the approach to your final presentation?
It's like everything.
What?
It's the
right. So where do we? So as you were probably turning in this first version of the approach, you realized you haven't got a lot of work to do. So what are we going to do? How are we going to close that gap between now and the final presentations, which are probably about 3 weeks out? Dead silence. Keep writing. What are you lacking in the approach right now? If you had to list some of your sort of deficiencies in the approach, what do you think they are? What do you think they're related to? So let's step back just a second and ask, what is supposed to be in the approach? What's the main function of the approach section from a senior design point of view? From the if you look at the goals of this course, what's the goal of this course? To have fun? No. I have fun in this course. Yes, of course we want you to have fun, but... So what's the acid test for senior design? How do you graduate next semester and get your little certificate that says you survived senior design? You build something that works, right? You show me your working system. How many people would agree with that statement? If you show me a working system at the end of second semester, you will graduate.
That's it. It's a higher chance than maybe you know.
So is that a necessary or a necessary and sufficient condition?
It's not sufficient.
It's not sufficient. Why? The paper is just a tool. What? Amber?
Why the exhibition?
No, you were gonna answer what the goal of the course is, I think.
Oh, I was gonna say have a working prototype.
No. That's a necessary condition. Not a it's actually not a necessary, it's not even a necessary condition, but it's certainly not a necessary and sufficient condition. Why? What is the overall goal of this course? Very good. Who said that? Evidence of design. Excellent. 3 gold stars today. What does that mean? Right. So we were talking about this today in our coordinators meeting because most of the second semester teams are behind on their hardware. And many of the teams are still operating under the assumption that we're coming up to the second hardware prototype review next week. And so many of the systems are still not yet fully functional. And many of the students are thinking, well, you know, we really just have to show them before the final presentation that the system is functional. And we were talking about the fact that they still don't get the point that the reason we had that first hardware prototype due early in the semester was because between that one and this one, They were supposed to actually redesign their system to fix all the problems and to meet and to meet their design constraints. That's what senior design is about. It's not just building something. It's this whole thing about evidence of design, which means you build something, you design something, you build it, you test it, you find out it doesn't meet all of your design constraints, you go back and redesign it based on what you learned from that first process, and then hopefully it comes closer to achieving your performance. Why is this the process? Because invariably in engineering design, you're optimizing. Optimizing is a very good word. You're optimizing the system so that it meets your design constraints at minimal cost and all these other things that you worry about. We don't want systems to be over-designed. We want them to be designed sort of, to minimally meet your requirements, because presumably that then means you're saving money and other things like that, or whatever is relevant to your particular project. So where in the design document do you convince us of your evidence of design? Not a hard question at this point. In the approach. Okay, so how do you convince me in the approach of evidence of design? We have a lot of people missing today, actually. Attendance is trailing off. How many teams are present? So team number one, team number two, team number three, one. Where's the rest of your team? You don't have to answer that. Tell them they were missing today. Team number four, team number five, team number six, team number seven. So about half, some of the people missing. Okay, so how do you convince me in the approach section of evidence of design? We talked about this a few weeks ago, but I don't expect you to remember everything about that. Well, when you open up your engineering textbook, the answers to these questions are not that hard. You have your engineering textbook, you have your Gen Ed Humanities or whatever textbook. You open up these two and you look at them. What's different between the two? My intro students can answer this. When you open up that Gen Ed textbook, if it's a humanities course, what do you see? Pictures? Really? What? You see text, right? Maybe some pictures, but lots of text. You open up your engineering book, what do you see? Equations, right? Why? I know some of this may seem trivial, but I really think students don't quite get this until, too far into senior design. Why do you see equations in your engineering textbooks?
To explain what the pictures mean.
You can explain what the pictures mean in terms of words.
It's what we use.
Why?
Just keep you on that question.
What?
It's easier to calculate stuff with numbers and with words.
You had a comment? The laws of physics, getting closer. Calculation, getting closer. What is the language of engineering? What is engineering all about? No, math is a means to the end. Math is just a tool, just like computer software is just a tool.
How things work?
We'll go with that. That's getting closer. But what's the difference between? I'll give you three kind of examples. Explorers. Suppose you're living in 1500 A.D. and you're an explorer. Scientists, basic scientists, and engineers. What are the difference between these three things? And why are engineers the ultimate profession? So what happens? What is it? How does the explorer become famous? Mark, you were gonna.
The explorer discovers something new.
The explorer finds the Grand Canyon. I think I might have talked about this, right? It always amazes me that somebody gets credit for finding the Grand Canyon. I mean, how do you miss this thing? Right?
I was just going to say, explorers just kind of
stumble upon things. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit more to it than that. But generally speaking, you know, they find a canyon, they find a mountain, they find a gold, a diamond, or, I mean, it's there, they find it. Basic science. Now I'm going to pick on the physicists a little bit, because I used to aspire to be a physicist. What's the difference between physics and engineering? Discover or create? Create. Physics, what, if you're a high, you know, let's pick a particular branch of physics. High energy physics, particle physics. What is this amount, this, and again, I'm not trying to pick on the physicists, but let's face it, their job is pretty simple. What do? It's, and there really is a lot of analysis to this, but let's pick on them anyway. Their job is pretty simple. What is it? If you're a high energy physicist, what? I'm sorry? Well, how do you play with atoms, though? When I was a freshman, I was an aspiring physicist at University of Chicago, and my professor took us on a tour there. At the time, we were touring Fermi Laboratories, which was one of the big accelerators. And he said, you look around this room, you look at all the people who have positions along this accelerator, and basically, these are the next group of people that are going to win Nobel Prizes. And the whole point is to get a spot on these accelerators, because that's where it all, I mean, if you can't be part of one of these accelerator experiments, you're not going to do great things in particle physics. Because what do? They simply smash atoms at really high speeds, and then they detect what happens. They look at what happens, and then eventually they build theories around this. But by and large, they're trying to understand phenomena in nature that already exist. They're essentially not much different than the explorers, because they're discovering and trying to understand existing things. We talked at the beginning of the semester about why is engineering different than these two things?
It's the application.
Because we're creating things which have not existed before. Now, what are the steps in doing that? And yes, this all relates to the approach section. Why do we have equations in these textbooks? Why do engineers work with equations? What's the first step in trying to create something new?
Understanding the old.
Understanding the old. So we use equations, we use mathematics to understand what exists and to model it. How does design fit into this process? We use design equations to extend what we know and and use these to describe what we're hoping to create. For example, that soft drink can, there are a very nice set of equations that describe various aspects of that soft drink can. And the dimensions of that software can are by and large optimized to give you maximum volume for minimum surface area. This is one of the nice little pieces, little demonstrations you can do with calculus. When I tell grade school kids, why do you need to know calculus? That's one of my examples. You can actually derive the dimensions of that can if your goal is to maximize volume and minimize surface area.
Shouldn't the can be a sphere then?
Well, there's some practical manufacturing issues. Yeah, so let's not go too far with this. But I forget. Yeah, that it's quite possible. Of course, spheres don't stack very well. There's also, of course, structural issues. But spheres are actually pretty structurally rigid as well. So, you know, we use analysis to understand, but we also use these equations to design and predict, to optimize. So this is essentially what your approach section has to do. Your approach section has to start off with the basic physics, if your problem is grounded in some basic physics. Your approach section has to begin with what we know, what we understand, the science relevant to your particular project. It then has to synthesize that into a design for a new product or new system. And ultimately, you have to come up with some design equations for that new system. Then you will optimize those equations to meet your constraints, and you will show us how you actually plug values into those equations so that you produce an overall optimal design, whether that means minimizing cost or maximizing some aspect of performance. That's what a good approach section does. Now, do your approach sections that you turned in today do that? No. Why? I mean, I'd be pleasantly surprised, but my experience is they aren't quite there yet. Why? You tell me, what aspects of your project are deficient right now? You're probably pretty good on the high-level functionality. You're probably pretty good on design constraints. But what you're probably lacking is some basic knowledge about the technology. Many of you have probably not assimilated all of the literature yet related to your project. And by literature, I don't mean web pages. I mean the real technical literature that represents the seminal papers that define the technology you're dealing with, or the important studies and that kind of thing. So that's usually one area where I see deficiencies. Now, that should be a task for somebody in your group to build that knowledge base, but that isn't something everybody in the group should do. Another problem we face with the approach sections are it's really hard for people to do divisional labor on the approach section. How many people had more than one person in your group contribute to your approach section? And be honest, I'm not going to keep track of this. All right, well, that's not too bad. Was that easy or was that painful? What? Merging the writing and all that is not trivial. Styles and so one aspect is the fundamental science. Another aspect, I think, is reducing your design to a set of critical design equations. And that's something that may not completely happen until next semester when you actually start building things, but you have to push that along, because the goal by the end of the first semester is to be able to convince us that your design actually will work if you build it, and it will meet your design constraints. So the approach section, this is an iterative thing. You'll probably get beat up this week on your approach sections, but take it as constructive feedback. Okay, what's the next piece of the document we want to talk about? Well, today I want to talk about the executive summary. This is a fairly easy thing to write if you understand your project. Why do we have executive summaries?
Because people don't want to read a 30-page approach section.
Right. Whenever you do a document that has an executive summary, more than likely that will be the most read portion of your document. Very few people, including your most importantly, your upper management, will never read your document beyond the executive summary. You hand a 100-page or 500-page document to your boss's boss, and you ask for that nice merit raise, because you did a really good job on this document. How much time do you think your boss's boss is going to spend reading that document? A couple minutes. How do you think your boss's boss will read that document? What? Have secretary read it.
Read the summary, skim through the rest of it.
What happens if that document doesn't have an executive summary?
It will not be read.
It will not be read. But fortunately, you'll have an executive summary because your boss will have told you this already. What's your boss going to do? And you may laugh at these things, but 10 years from now, you give me a call, you will find yourself in this position. You will be doing this. What your boss's boss is probably going to do is the first thing that they'll do is weigh the document. I mean, by that I mean, okay, so it's 500 pages. Well, that's good. I mean, it's obviously this person worked hard on this. It's big. But what they're basically going to do is they're going to thumb through it and look for what? Pictures. They're going to look for pictures and they're going to look for bulleted lists. And then they're going to read the executive summary. So, what must be in this executive summary to communicate the essential information to all these high-level people who control your future but don't have time to actually understand what you're doing? What's your goal in writing this executive summary? Okay, how long is the executive summary? One page. In this class, we use one page. 1-inch margin. So let's get all the easy stuff out of the way. This is built into your template, but 1-inch margins, title, blank line between paragraphs, 11-point font, no references. I think that's about all the basic stuff. Exactly one page. Give or take a line. But generally speaking, it should be exactly one page. You can edit your writing to make sure you use every line on this page because using one page to describe what you've spent basically a year and four people's worth of time on, you should be able to fill up one page nicely. In terms of words, I don't remember exactly how many words that is. You can do a word count and see what it is. So that's the space you have to work with. No figures. Sometimes you'll do bulleted lists, or you'll sometimes use some bold text to direct person's attention, but we won't get too crazy with that stuff in this course. So what are you trying to communicate? By the end of second semester, when your project is done, and you want to communicate your what you've accomplished in one page to me, what are the key things I need to see? Your goals? You were going good there until you got the plan of action. Plan of action starts to sound a little weak. Why should I care about your plan of action?
Pretty
I'm paying your salary. I hired a good engineer. I assume you can plan and, you know. So is the silence, you really don't understand this, or the just general malaise and passiveness? I have a sense it's a bit of both. I have a sense when people write executive summaries in this class, they don't really have a well-formed idea of how they're going to communicate their accomplishments to me. So how do engineers communicate accomplishments? What am I going to be looking for when I read this executive summary? Well, he said evidence of design earlier, so I should write something like, our design was really good, and we worked really hard, and we had lots of good plans and goals. Is that a good executive summary? This isn't going too well here. So what needs to be in the executive summary?
What you set out to do and how you did it?
Not quite. How you did it's not as important, not that important. Though, to some extent, that does get into design, but...
I guess everything after, like how you did it, like what the results were.
The results! Okay, now we're getting somewhere. The results. How do you communicate results? Our results were good. What?
They were.
What's the problem with that?
Not quantitative.
Why? Right. Why? And what's good to you might not necessarily be good to me. So generally what you need to see in executive summary is impact. We'll actually read an executive summary of one of the other senior design teams in a few minutes to make this a little more concrete. You want to communicate results. You want to communicate impact. The way you do that is through numbers. So you need to tell me things like, our design was 30% better than, you know, the competitor or the previous design, or we improved the system by 27%. That kind of stuff gets my attention as a reader, as someone who cares about your project. So the bottom line in the executive summary is it needs to be summarize your quantitative results. It needs to have impact, and that impact needs to be measured in terms of test data and quantitative results. We accomplished, you know, this is a new design that's 30% efficient than all previous designs. For example, if you were writing a project on solar cells or almost any renewable energy system, what would you, if you just tell me the title of this project is Improved Renewable Energy or something like that, what am I going to expect to see in that executive summary? And how do we compare technology when we're in an energy type application?
Efficiency.
There's going to be some statement about we're, you know, 87% efficient, and that's a new record for this kind of technology, right? That's the kind of thing you'll expect to see. And somebody who's an expert in that area will know roughly how all the other technologies compare in terms of efficiencies and costs and things, and therefore they'll be able to assess your project if that information is there. If that information is missing, what does that tell me about your project? And I hate to sound so devious about this, but this is what happens when you review papers. If you're not making that information readily apparent to me in your executive summary, What does that tell you, tell me as the reader about your project? It's what?
Something that you don't want to, like, not good enough to show.
You're hiding something, exactly. Because if you did get a really good result, it would be there. You'd say, this is fantastic, look at this, 87%. This is engineering. Engineers deal in terms of numbers, in terms of quantitative analysis. So, the executive summary in this course is essentially four paragraphs. The first paragraph will summarize the problem section of your document. It should be relatively high level and provide good motivation for your project. Not approach, but, you know, problem statement. The second paragraph deals with your design constraints and a little bit of your approach. Summarizes the technical aspects of your design. It should include an overview of your design and how this relates to the desired functionality. This is a little bit electrical engineering-ish, but don't use particular chips. Don't say, you know, our project was to use this particular piece of equipment or this particular device. Speak more generally in terms of what you're trying to accomplish. The third paragraph contains your results. This is how you're going to convince me that your design is viable and you've achieved some amount of improvement. And then the last paragraph is impact. Why should I care about your design? Why should I care about this project? And hopefully that will say things like achieving these design goals means, you know, we can enable new markets because the cost per unit or whatever is going to be low and enable things. You know, a good example of this, we've talked, for example, about things like iPods and iPads and that. If your results section was, therefore we've designed an iPad that costs $10,000, what's wrong with that?
There's already an iPad that costs less than that.
Well, even if you were the first one to design an iPad and you said, you know, here's this iPad, it costs $10,000. Great result, great, you know, quantitative. You could even tell me we reduced the cost from our initial design to 30%. It would have cost $15,000. We reduced that to $10,000. Fantastic. 30% or 50% reduction, whatever that is.
What kind of sucks?
Why?
$10,000 for an iPad?
Why does that suck?
Because that is a lot of money for an iPad.
And
that is too much money for an iPad.
So that's not going to have impact, right? We had equivalents of iPads in the 70s, even before I was involved in this era. People knew how to do touch screens and all that. And they envisioned these things. We actually had video phones. You know, one of the classic examples is they had video phones in the 1960s, and they flopped because the technology was just too far ahead of the market. So the point is, you're not done when you've reached this stage. You still have to tell me about the impact. You still have to tell me, you know, why it was so important that you achieve the particular design goals that you did. So let's try to make this a little more concrete. So these are the Senior Design 2 projects that are currently in progress. And these projects have iterated now a couple times on their executive summaries. So let's, to make this a little interesting, let's have you pick a project and then we will talk about their summary, since I kind of know the projects. The Jaeger Motor Company. Okay? So the main objective of this project, I'll let you go ahead and read this, is to successfully tune an engine for the FSAE race car. And their goal is to maximize torque and so forth. So this is a good example of why the executive summary is so important. What I will do is load their executive summary, and certainly you ought to be able to understand everything important about this project from the executive summary. So why don't you go ahead and read that? Those of you who have computers up, you could just load this yourself. But is that okay? Can everybody see that, or does it need to be larger? So I'll give you a few seconds to read that, and then I'll scroll the page. Scroll. Can I scroll? Okay. So what's the first thing you notice in that last paragraph? Even more basic than what? No, even more basic than that. Spelling error. Okay, so someone didn't proofread this. Now, some basics. What, at this stage in the course, and this is a trick question, so think carefully before you answer. At this stage in the course, knowing that I'm looking for results and accomplishments and impact, what tense should you write your executive summary in? Past tense. Why? At this stage in the course, for your team, projects. Future tense. We have future tense, we have past tense, and there's...
Second person.
At the end of the course, what tense is the executive summary going to be written in?
Past.
If you write it in future tense now, which is the temptation, what's going to have to happen between now and the end of the second semester? You have to rewrite it. Same thing with your approach sections. So I encourage you to write in the past tense. Trust me on that. I think I've finally convinced my own coordinators of this, but I learned this years ago that it just, otherwise you'll forget to update your documents, and then when I'm reading it, I'll see that the tenses are wrong and you'll get a hit for that. Now, what's the problem with writing this section in past tense at this point in the course? We don't know what we're doing, and we don't have results. Why should that stop you? We are engineers, after all. How much do you know about the results you expect? You are clueless? You have no idea? You have some idea, right? So when you write this executive summary at this point in the course, you actually should have a pretty good idea, but write it in past tense and project what the results are going to be. That's important from an engineering point of view because you have to have some idea of the kinds of results you're going to get. If you're designing improved engines, you know, if you tell me I'm going to get a 1,000% improvement in gas mileage, what does that tell me as an experienced engineer? You're probably clueless about this project. If you tell me you're going to get a 50% improvement, I'll give you a little trick about writing here. You tell me you're going to get a 50% improvement in gas mileage, what am I thinking?
Yeah, right.
What?
Yeah, right.
Well, a little more subtle than that.
Guessing.
I'm guessing, right? And I'm thinking maybe they're thinking 25, maybe they're thinking 50, but they don't have much of a clue, right? If you write, on the other hand, 47%, then I'm thinking what as a reader? No? It sounds like they calculated this. I better read a little further and, you know, get some idea of if they really know what they're talking about. So your executive summaries, write them as though you finished the project. Tell the story as you would like it to be when you finish the course. Now, students struggle with this, and they always argue, well, you're asking me to lie. I'm not asking you to lie, but I'm asking you to project where this project's going to be. And the reason students struggle with this is very often they don't have a clue where the project's going to be. But you have to have a good sense of what the answers are, where you're headed. It's much like working a homework problem. If you work a homework problem and you're clueless as to what the answer is, generally what's going to happen with that homework problem? What? It's going to be wrong. Come on, how many of you work physics problems backwards? Give me the answer, give me the problem, I can kind of fill in between. You didn't go to the back of your physics book and look up the answers? Do they still do this in physics books? Right? You look at the problem, you look at the answer, and you build a theory that connects the two. Engineers generally have very good ideas of the answers before they start solving problems. If you're going to propose a design to make an engine more efficient, your manager is going, you know, people, the expert engineers you're working with, if you tell them, well, I think if we do this, this, and this, they'll have a pretty good guess of what the impact on gas mileage is going to be. And it won't be 100%. If you're lucky, it'll be like 1 or 2 or 3%. So write this executive summary as though you achieved, you know, the project went nicely, you achieved all your goals, and these are the results you expect to get. That tells me you have a pretty good idea, at this stage in the course, that tells me you have a pretty good idea of what's going to unfold in this project. So in terms of this particular project, what did you think about this executive summary? What was your high-level impression when reading this executive summary? Thumbs up or thumbs down? And I actually haven't read this. This is actually the first time I've read this. Intro students, thumbs up or thumbs down? You're kind of new to this. Middle? Oh, come on, that's not allowed. Middle in what sense?
It's well written, but there's some parts that don't read well.
Okay.
It's written in the future tense.
So, that's a problem, since this is second semester, almost the end of second semester. Senior design students, thumbs up or thumbs down on this? If this were your, then think of it this way. If this were your project and that was your executive summary, would you be feeling good or would you be feeling like you're in trouble? So I would say this is not a bad executive summary. I mean, there's a lot of good technical detail in this thing. But like all executive summaries in senior design, I mean, they need to be continually refined. So let's talk about the first paragraph. So the main objective of this project, blah, blah, blah. Formula SAE is a design competition. The objective of the competition, a little bit about the competition, dynamic events include acceleration, and so forth. So what do they accomplish in the first paragraph?
Basically why they're doing the project.
Why they're doing the project. So that's essentially their problem statement. Now what's good about this paragraph is you'll notice they did not talk about approach. They did not say, we're going to do this, or we're going to do that, or our project is to build blah, blah, blah using this. Now, competitions are generally good for senior design because competitions are usually run as design competitions, and a lot of our documentation requirements flow out of that. So fortunately, they actually have somebody kind of defining the problem for them, the people who made the rules of the competition. So that's acceptable for this particular project. For some of you who are just doing, aren't working two competitions, you'll have to kind of, you'll have to condense your two-page problem statement into that paragraph. So that paragraph's not bad. I mean, I think that's a very good, very reasonable competition. Only one minor problem here. No references in the executive summary. That's just, much like abstracts, you don't really use references in these things. Okay, so the second paragraph. So what are they trying to accomplish in the second paragraph? What about the design constraints? So they're certainly trying to set up their design constraints. They're basically trying to motivate their design constraints. They're trying to tell you some of the key design constraints, which is what I would like to see in the second paragraph. But they're also trying to tell us sort of why these exist and convince us that these are well-motivated design constraints. They also are beginning to get into approach because they begin to talk about, for example, the team concluded a smaller engine would be more effective. What voice should the executive summary be written in? Active voice, passive voice, first person, third person? What? Why active voice? I thought all scientific literature was written in passive voice. Give me an example of a sentence in this second paragraph that's written in active voice. American students who grew up in this wonderful educational system that no longer teaches grammar. So who learned English outside of the U.S.? They probably know the answer to this, right? When I took my first job, I was in a group that studies language, and it was hilarious because all the Americans, we never learned grammar. You know, they stopped teaching grammar years ago. But our foreign researchers, they grew up in the very rigid systems where they taught all this grammar, and they knew the ins and outs of all grammatical theory for English in levels of detail that Americans just don't ever learn. So, active versus passive. Give me a sentence, hint, hint, that's written in active voice. Amber?
Say, our design team will.
How about the highlighted one? It's past tense, but it's active voice. They could, you know, if it was present tense, they would say, we conclude, or we. So, give me an example of a sentence that's sort of passive voice. What's the difference between the two from a, and I don't want to turn this into a tech writing course, but what's the difference between the two from an impact point of view? Why is active voice preferred these days? Right, but why is that good? Excellent. So passive voice always sounds waffly, right? It's like, oh, something happened, and I'm not responsible for it. It is to be concluded, you know. Active voice is nice because you're in control. It's like, we did this. You're taking responsibility. It also, generally, people will say it reads a little bit better. There's some wording issues that are, some of the wording in this is a little bit clumsy for this kind of a forum, but it's not too bad. So the design constraints and a little bit of approach in the second paragraph. What about the third paragraph? What are they trying to accomplish in that paragraph? Right. This is sort of the evidence of design. I mean, this is where they're telling us what their design is and why they made these choices. And I actually think that's a pretty decent paragraph. I mean, I think if you read this paragraph, you generally think they know what they're doing. And then the last paragraph. What are they trying to accomplish in the last paragraph? Let me ask that another way. What's missing from this abstract or the summary, knowing that this is a competition? There's one way that could really impress me and kind of convince me they knew what they were doing in this competition. It's missing from this abstract. It's part of the impact. That's a good point, actually. That's a very good point. Except I don't think the competition falls within the time that senior design is running. But something related to that. So when you go into a competition, what happens if you have no clue what the parameters of the winning entries are going to be? You know, if I may use a sports analogy, when you're playing a team for a championship, do you just go into the game, show up and play that team? No. You scout the team. You have some idea of what their strengths, weaknesses, what their approach is going to be. You have some idea of how they're going to perform. What's missing from this abstract in terms of the competition? We don't really know what the winning entries are going to look like. You know, what? How much do they have to accomplish? We know sort of what the rules are, but, you know, we don't know sort of what the winning parameters are likely to be.
It does say the acceleration is 4.1 seconds. It's not at the bottom there.
Right, right. But I think that I think that was what they were going to do or something like that.
It was the top 10 teams.
Oh, it did say that. Okay, I must have missed that. Let's.
Yeah, summarizing the portal. Yeah, 31.
Okay, so that's actually good. I missed that. That's actually good. So it would have been nice to sort of build a little bit more impact into this. I think of all the paragraphs in this, probably the last paragraph's the weakest. But overall, I would say this is not a bad executive summary, especially if this was written in the first semester. I would say probably the problem is this didn't get much better from the end of the first semester to this point in second semester. But they'll go through one more revision of this before the course ends. But this is not a bad executive summary. Now, you're going to struggle the first time through on this because you're going to be afraid to put down a lot of details. You're going to be afraid to commit to things. Don't be so afraid to commit to things. We can always revise, but don't commit to things which are unrealistic. So try to give us a good concrete idea of what your design goals are and what you think you can accomplish in building this system. Okay? Any questions on executive summary? One page, not a lot of text, but it's one of those things students really struggle with. So, okay, I think that's it then. I'll talk to the intro students afterwards. But so what's up this week? What's due next week? We're about 2 weeks out from the presentations, right? No, about 3 weeks out from the presentations. So hopefully you'll you're working on your slides. Okay.